Hello, everyone. The date is October 19th. My calendar here it says Cheshvan 1. The name of the month actually is Mar Cheshvan, and not because of Mar as in bitter, although that's a nice drasha, but that's actually the name Mar Cheshvan, and that's when you make the announcement. It should be Mar Cheshvan. This is the 21st class. And as I said, for the people who just came on, we'll fix that thing with the password, so you won't need it next week. A couple of people have asked, so let me, before we even get into the class, let me explain something to everyone here. Let me pull up my things here. Hold on, I want to show you something. Okay, now I got it. Share computer sound. If you miss a class, or you want to, first of all, you can always go to the website. Let's see, here we are. You should see this. Make sure it's come on. You can listen, but you can also go to the, if you go to YouTube and then you just search under YouTube, Torah in Motion, you come up to this page. And then you can, there's a few ways. You can go to videos. And everything recently put on, you can see and you can listen. You can listen in the car as well. You just stick it in with your Apple Play, and then you can speed it up different speeds, or you can search. For instance, let's say you want to search Mark Shapiro or just Stephen Shapiro, and then it'll plug up, pull up all the different classes. And you can, for example, you can watch, and then you go. If you go here under settings, you can speed it up. So you can do 1.5, 1.25. And that's for the number of people who ask me. I keep saying you can watch on YouTube. They're asking, well, how do you watch on YouTube? Again, just go to the Torah in Motion site, and then you can either search for my name, or if you want to just see recent videos, there's so many other interesting ones. That's how you do it. If you're not sure, again, play around or email me. I'll show you. It's not that hard. Okay, a number of people sent me comments here. I'm sorry, I'm not going to be able to get to everyone today. I will get to everyone, but we never, the next class or the class after. They just, I don't want to spend someone's sessions. Someone said I should spend a whole class just responding to things. Now, I like this way a little bit. Otherwise, it'll be a different format. But I'll just spend 10, 15 minutes and then we'll move on. And the others, I'll get to you. Oh, I just, okay, let me, I read more of that book over Shabbos, which I told you about, which is has the stories, it's in Hebrew, of this American rabbi with stories of Gedolim. And, I don't know, think it'll ever be published. It's not like Nassim Kamenetsky's book, but I told you one interesting. There's just like two other interesting things. I think you'll enjoy this. And then as we go on, maybe more. He says that, I'm just reading this. Once Rabbi Ruderman was with his brother-in-law, Rav Naftali. Rav Naftali is, was his name Herman, I think, Neuberger, who really ran the yeshiva. In a car, and they saw a sign. I don't know what city, maybe this is Baltimore, Kal Adas Yirein. They have many shuls called Kal Adas Yirein. That means, you know, the congregation of the righteous, the God-fearing. And Rav Ruderman was upset. He goes, Eich omrim al atzmam shehein yirein. How can they say about themselves they're yirein? Ana Rav Naftali, what did Rabbi Neuberger say back? Ve'ich korim ba'alei mu'atzes ha'gedolei Torah, shem zeh al atzmam. How can the people on the Gold Moses Gedolei Torah call themselves Gedolim? So touche, I guess. And then he quotes interesting Rav Kamenetsky, which I had never heard before, that Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky opposed giving two names to children. He says because nowhere in the Torah or Tanakh do you find someone with two names. So one of his grandchildren said to him, but there's a Tosfos Kesubos which refers to Rabbi Yaakov Yisrael. And Rabbi Kamenetsky said, well, that's because Yaakov and Yisrael was the same. And just like Aryeh Leib is the same. And also Rabbi Kamenetsky said, Pinchas Eliyahu, we say they're the same. So that's okay. But nothing else. No, we all have double names. So Rabbi Yaakov has no double names. But then one of his grandchildren, what was it? Someone said to him, but your grandchildren aren't listening to you. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky's grandchildren gave themselves double names. And Rav Yaakov said as follows: the Torah says Vodat, you should tell your children and your children's children. It says, tell your children, and then it says, Ovnei Vanecha. He says that whatever happens after the children, he says, the Torah says, Vodat Elvimcha, Vanecha. You should tell your sons, right? So Yaakov says, whatever happens for the grandchildren, that's not my responsibility. And it's et cetera, et cetera. So very interesting. I made a mistake last week, and Yossi Farhi from Israel corrects me. I said that among the Baladi and the Shami, I thought they were evenly divided. Yossi Farhi says, not true at all. There are many more of this, the Shami Yemenites. Now, the reason why I thought it is because, and I looked this up, Yosef Tobi in one of his books mentions this, in Sana, the capital, and in other places, the big cities in Yemen, or they're not so big, but the cities in Yemen, the so-called Baladi were the majority. But throughout the small villages, the Shami were the majority. And so, for instance, the Baladi, a real Baladi, they don't know from the Sfira restrictions. They shave, do everything during Sfira. Not only that, they will wear, many of them, there's a dispute, will wear their tefillin through to the end of davening on Rosh Chodesh, not take it off beforehand. There's other things. Okay, the next thing, I'm looking at the time here, is from a comment from maybe some of you know this here, Rabbi Ari Enkin from Beit Shemesh, has written many volumes of halacha and very interesting works. He writes to me, he's been watching the classes on YouTube, and I said, when we did Rabbi Ratzabi's response, and if you recall, we spoke about, you get a book sent to you, you don't want it, you have to return it. I mentioned also, if someone sends you a letter, you don't have to reply to the letter. It costs you money. You don't have to reply. You're not obligated. Rabbi Hinkin says that he agrees with me. Since it costs you money, you don't have to respond. But if someone includes an envelope or if it's an email, he thinks there's a hashkafic requirement to do so. And he has an article in, you can see it on OU Torah, called Responding to Letters. And he makes the case, he quotes from Chaim Palachi and others, that you are obligated if it's just a matter of your time. I don't know how far to take this, because some people are getting hundreds of emails a day. Obviously, you can't reply to everyone. But his basic point, I accept what he says. Look, you can say that if someone on the street asks you a question, you can say, I don't have to answer. It's my time. Time is money. Even if it's only 30 seconds. We have to have certain midos. And so Rabbi Hankin, you can read his article and he quotes from Chaim Palachi saying that this is Derech Eretz, and Derech Eretz goes before the Torah. Okay, and the last thing I want to discuss before we begin, many, many of you wrote to me about some of the grammatical things. And one of you even suggested do a whole class about it. I'm not going to do that, but I do want to just take 5 minutes to speak about some of these matters. And I thank David Eisen, who I believe is with us, who followed up on this with Rabbi Weider. If you recall, I said about the word vayhi, Vayehi, we spoke about that. And I mentioned to you that when you have the word Vav Yud Hey Yud, even if you have the Gaia, it's always pronounced Vayehi. It's not pronounced Vayehi. And then I played for you Rabbi Weider, and he was pronouncing it Vayehi. And I said that, with all due respect, I don't think that's correct, etc. But I don't know Rabbi Weider. Maybe someone can ask him. Well, David Eisen. Oh, and someone emailed me that, first of all, that the Koran Siddur does have Vayhi, like I said. But Benno Jacob, who was the Baal Kori for years in Washington Heights, he said it Vayhi. But still, I say it's Vayhi. Well, as a follow-up to this, Rabbi David Eisen was in touch with Rabbi Weider. And very interestingly, Rabbi Weider acknowledged that he said that what he has, he no longer believes what he wrote it is correct. In fact, he did a new series of tapes with the Sephardic pronunciation, and he writes Vayhi. So he agrees with what I said. I was happy to hear that, because he's really the expert, not me. I'm just making a ha'ara, as they say. Those who can't do teach. I can't lane like him. I can't do that. But at least I can point out a few things here and there. And I have some other things cautious on how he does it. But be that as it may, he's an Ish Emes, and He acknowledges that it should be Vayhi. That's correct. So I, not only that, we then had correspondence following that, and he says he wonders. The Gemara in Megillah, Daf Yud Amud Beis, says that wherever it says Vayhi, what is it? Eino Ela Lashon Tsar. And he argues, and he raised the question: are they saying that that's how you read the Gemara? It's a combination, Vay and he. Both of them mean like grief and woe. So that's what the Gemara says when it says Vay he is Lashon Tsar. It means that Vay, which the Gemara uses, meaning like an expression of woe, and he, which means like mourning or feeling bad. So Rabbi Reeder acknowledges now that it is correct, Vayhi. And then furthermore, he sent to me that something from Rabbi Breuer. Rabbi Breuer, who edited Tanakh, and he also edited the Masoretic stuff in the Siddur published by Chorev, in which he states explicitly that all Vayhis, even if there's a Gaia, is Vayhi. So I thank you, David Eisen, for that. David, now, there's something else we need to recall when we're thinking about this. Let me get the screen up here for a second here. And that is that, hold on, where did I got it? No. On here, I have it somewhere. Ah, you look at the beginning of Megillas Esther. The beginning of Megillas Esther, you can see it says, Vayhi. There's no Gaia. So everyone would agree that there you say it as a, just read it, Vayhi. And David Eisen sent me all sorts of interesting YouTubes from different people reading it. And I can send you plenty. They all say Vayhi, including this year at the YU, the Gluck Beis Medrash. The Ammonite one David sent me, which was sent in, was interesting because the pronunciation, they pronounce certain letters, certain vowels different than us. I believe it was the Segel, maybe they're responding, right? Segel is like, sounds like a patach. But one of the ones David sent me is the Lubavitcher Rebbe. So I want you to listen here to the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Okay, so he read it very clearly, Vayehi. Where do I have how it should be read is where's I thought I saved here. Listen to Rabbi Weider. Vayhi. Okay, I know this is going to maybe get some Lubavitchers upset. I don't know. I'm not going to say Rebbe's wrong or anything. All I'm saying is that every person who's ever discussed how to read it, as far as I know, in all the rules, they all say it's Vayhi. Ashkenazim often weren't so makpid on grammar. The Rama, when he was challenged by the Marshal, Shlomo Luria, says that, you know, I don't really study grammar. The Tilas Hashem Siddur is all messed up in terms of grammatical things. But all I can tell you is what the rule is. And as long as I have you for just three more minutes. Oh, and thank you also for Baruch. Baruch mentions that the old laner in his shul, Joel Schnorr, Zichrono Livracha of Joel Schnorr, he made a big deal about this, and he called it that it's Vayhi. He also asked me, Baruch last week, is it Mishnah Berura or Mishnah Verura? And I wasn't, I said, you're probably right. It should be Verura. And then I thought about it. Absolutely, it's Mishnah Verura. But you know what? That's the convention. We say Berura. It's also Torah Samima. It should be Torah, not Torah Tamima, Torah. There shouldn't be a Dagesh after that as well. Or what about, you always have that. We had in this last week's parsha of Arts Haisa Sohu, not Haisa Tohu, and Pnei Sahom. But what about Bnei Brak? Bnei Brak is a city. It appears in Nach. In Nach, it's Bnei Vrak. Do we say Bnei Vrak? No, we say Bnei Brak. That's we could say Bnei Brak, even though it should be Bnei Vrak. It's interesting, the Abarbanel, this is in Yoshua. He forgot this, even though he's an expert in Nach. because if you look at the Abarbanel's commentary on the Haggadah, which says when the sages were studying the Bnei Brak, the Abarbanel doesn't know what Bnei Brak is. He says he thinks it's some sort of couch that they sat on. They were sitting in Bnei Brak, but it's a place, and it tells you it's in the territory of Dan, and it's by the water. Okay, that is enough for us. Oh, there's just one more thing I want to tell you. Do we have the time? You know what? Let's stop here. I will tell you next class. I'm going to show you something that everyone gets wrong next class. And I'll show you what my son, he asked me, he's in Israel now, when he laned the Shabbos. They were able to have a whole laning because 29 of them all have COVID, including my son. But none of them, Baruch Hashem, had any symptoms. So they were all able to have a minyan. But there weren't any rebbeim or anything. It was just the students. And I told him how to pronounce the word, which I'll show you next week. And he said if he pronounces it this way, which is the proper way, you'll hear Rabbi Weider do it, everyone's going to correct him, even though they shouldn't correct him. And then I'm going to show you next class a mistake that everyone makes in Shabbos morning davening, except for the Moroccans. But it's already 8:48, so I'm going to, I will do this with you next week. In the meantime, I want to continue where we are, because we have all sorts of good stuff to get to. Getting back to the Sefer. Even before we do it, I see I have one more question that someone asked me. I'll say it quickly. Yes, I should have got to this last week. What do we do in Harachamon? Someone wants to know, is it Harachamon or Yakimonu or Sukkos David HaNofelis or Sukkos David HaNofalis? Because Artsko has Nofalis and I don't know what Birnbaum has. I can't remember. Korin has Nofelis. It's Nofelis. There's no question it's Nofelis because it's a pasuk. I'm going to pull it up right now just on my little computer here. It's in Amos. It says in Amos chapter 9, verse 11, Bayomahu Akim et Sukkos David HaNofelis. So that's how you pronounce this. So Art Scroll is incorrect, and many of the other benchers are incorrect. Now, why is it Nofelis, not Nofalis? It's a puzzle. Well, not everything is like that. Geshem, Gashem, we know what the puzzle, it's Gashem. The dispute where they say Geshem, Gashem has nothing to do with whether it's a puzzle. Everyone knows it's a puzzle, it's Gashem. It's a different reason. But for example, Melech, even if Melech's at the end of a sentence, there's many examples in Tanakh, you don't say Malech. This is just the vagaries of the language. Okay, let us return to what we are doing. We're in the middle, if you remember, of the tshuva to me, of Rabbi Yitzhak Ratzabi. Here he is again. Let me show you where he is. There he is. Rabbi Yitzhak Ratzabi, the great Yemenite posek. I've mentioned him a few times, a number of times. And all sorts of interesting questions about how you decide halacha. David Lichtenstein, his show, David Lichtenstein, he has a show a couple months ago, I listened to him in the car last week, on Psak Halacha. And many of the same exact issues that we discuss are dealt with in there. One of the things also, which we haven't dealt with, which they mentioned, is the issue of Asei Lecha Rav. You should establish, get yourself a rabbi. The rabbi, so what does that mean, Asei Lecha Rav? Does it mean a posek? Does it mean a rabbi, a guy? It's hard to know what it means there. There is a tradition that you should have a posek, but you could have a posek for different areas. Like in certain things, you ask one person, another you ask another person. But the issue we're discussing really doesn't focus on that, because if you're fortunate to have a great Rebbe who's a great posek, you can ask him anything. Then what happens if he passes away? Or what happens when and you don't have them? And most of us don't have a Rebbe like that. And many of us, they say a posek. It's their local rabbi. So it doesn't really answer the question. If you're reading, let's say, you read an article online, and Rav Moshe Feinstein says yes, one says mutter, and Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says usher. So what are you supposed to do? So you're going to go to, and by the way, thank you, Rav Aryeh from Israel. He sent me an article I'll get to at the end of our discussion, which deals with the exact same issues. And I'll tell you what he says, and we'll see if he agrees with Ratzabi. So you see, Rav Moshe says mutter, Rav Shlomo Zalman says usher. What do? You don't know. So you ask your rabbi. Your rabbi also is stuck with the same problem you have. You have two great gedolim. How do you make that decision? So we've been going through Rav Ratzabi's decision. I'm picking up on page 195. And he says, The proper approach in all these matters is not to search out for chumras, and all the more so not to search out for kulas, but to learn in order to do Shem Shemayim, and then you'll be able to come to the proper halacha. See, remember I told you last week, he seems to switch. At the beginning, I was asked about lay people, how lay people are supposed to decide. He then moves in to discuss if you're a rabbi and you can at least understand it, you can come to your own sort of conclusion. That's really all he speaks about this matter. He basically leaves it as that you can take any sefer you want, study it, and follow what the sefer says. Later, you'll learn perhaps that we don't, as a community, we don't necessarily follow this approach, so you should change and follow the community. But his attitude is that all these sfarim are good. You shouldn't be out there looking for kuas, looking for chumras. He thinks that you can ask one person one halacha question, another person another. You're not bound to the same person each time. And I was having with Rav Aryeh a discussion of this. So for instance, when I was in Israel, I had a shiloh. And I was not that far from the Sicily Ezra, so I went to his house and I asked him the question, and he gave me the answer. Does that mean now that I'm bound to the Sicily Ezra every single question I have? No one ever said that. When Rav Shechter comes to my town, he used to come every, let's say, 2 or 3 months, and you can ask questions. So if someone asks a question, does that mean that they're bound to everything? It's that there's this idea that if you have a great rabbi, you can ask him a shayla, and as long as you feel bound to what he tells you, it doesn't mean everything he tells you. Otherwise, it would make no sense to bring a posek into a town or anything, because we're not asking him all the questions. So that's basically what he doesn't really answer the question that this other rabbi deals with. How much can, if you read an article and you see that a great rabbi holds something, can you just adopt it? And if you don't, what's the procedure? I'll get back to that in a second, that question. Because today, that's how much of psak is today. Everyone's going online, and if they're not deciding themselves, they're sending emails out. You have all these rabbis, you can send emails out to ask them questions. Whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, that's another discussion. But anyone can go online and see all the different shitot. And what do you do? Like many of us online here did the organ donor thing of the RCA. Did we ask a shayla? I mean, the fact is, Rav Shechter doesn't support that. We were told that the RCA, an organization we respect, says to do this. So we did it. But does that mean that, who gave the authority for that? Does that mean we should have asked the Posek about this? Every time there's a new invention, there's this new thing. Thank you, David Eisen, for sending this as well. I sent it to Rav Shechter. He hasn't replied yet. There's a new thing called like the Shabbos umbrella, where I can show you a picture another time, where a piece of it is always open, and at the top, I think it is, you can close it a little, but the base is always open, and it has haskamas here from Rav Nebensal and many other big rabbis say it's okay. So that's going to come on the market eventually. And then you have a question: are you allowed to carry the Shabbos umbrella? So you're going to read an article, and you're going to read about the great rabbis who say it's a mutter and the great rabbis who say it's usher. How are you supposed to decide? Rav Ratzabi didn't really give a complete answer, but we'll get to this next rabbi in a second. Then, if you recall, he said that you could take any halachic work you want, but he said about the Aruch HaShulchan, that's not the best work to take because the Aruch HaShulchan has certain problems with it, he thought. So I wrote back to him astounded. And I said that this is the great work of Lithuanian Rabbanus, the Aruch HaShulchan. And he says as follows. Regarding Rav Yechiel Michal Epstein, the Aruch HaShulchan, who was the Rav of Navardik, he was the Rav of This not only was the Rav, we did classes on the Aruch HaShulchan. You can't see them on YouTube, but you can listen to them. And we spoke about how he defended the Musarniks in Navardik. He says, actually, what I said, that they don't necessarily rely on the Aruch HaShulchan, that comes from Lithuania. Because I said, I'm certain you must have heard this from Hungarian rabbis. And he says that Rabbi Kahaneman of Panevish, and he says, I believe he learned with the Aruch HaShulchan. He did. He was a student of the Aruch HaShulchan. And also Rav Chaim Greineman, that's from the Chazon Ish's family, the nephew of the Chazon Ish. They were the ones who said, he claims that he heard that Halacha Lemaise don't rely on the Aruch HaShulchan. We have other works that go before him. And then he says, I remember that in Yiros Moshe, he speaks very positively about the Aruch HaShulchan, saying, Kfar HaRazaken. But in my opinion, this is Rabbi Rasabi, the Aruch HaShulchan comes up with many Svarot and Chilukim, which he says, however, the Mishnah Berurah goes into matters in more Iyun. And in many areas, he says, I've seen the Aruch HaShulchan say astounding things, which are, he doesn't believe are correct. And he says, of course, there's many great things in the Aruch HaShulchan, and who am I, he says, a dwarf like myself, to say something about the Aruch HaShulchan. But he's saying, in my opinion, the Aruch HaShulchan's psakim are, he has a lot of svarot, which don't stand up. And then he says, I heard that the Epstein family are actually descended from Spanish Jews, like many other Ashkenazic families, like Weiss and and I don't know if that's true, but Aruch HaShulchan, that's what his son says. We spoke about it when we dealt with Aruch HaShulchan, Reb Baruch Epstein. The problem with Reb Baruch Epstein is not everything he says you can rely on, and who knows, but maybe it is true that they're descended from them. And he says, and that explains how the Aruch HaShulchan and his son, the Torah Tumim, have a very good style. I don't think that works either, because if you're talking hundreds of years living in Lithuania, I don't think genetically the your Hebrew style goes through. But that's what he says. And then he says, and look around in the yeshivas, and he's correct on this, they learn the Mishnah Berurah. And it's perhaps, there's basically no house today which doesn't have a Mishnah Berurah. And then he quotes, he goes on about this, how the Chazon Ish, you know, put the Mishnah Berurah, like Horah from the Sanhedrin. So it's a complete undermining here of the authority of the Mishnah Berurah. In Rabbi Henkin's book, Rabbi Henkin, who was killed, Eitam Henkin, he quotes on page 317, he's discussing the Kochal Shomi Adif, among the later authorities, who was regarded as a superior, that if there's a dispute, you go by. And he mentions how in his family tradition that the Aruch HaShulchan was the Poseg Acharon. But he also mentions here Rabbi Kahanamid, that who says that the Aruch HaShulchan's strength was like at the first glance when he first did the sugya, but in terms of going into it in more detail, he thought the Mishnah Berurah. So that could be where this story originates from, that the Mishnah Berurah should be preferred according to Rabbi Kahaneman. But we know that as I mentioned last class, many Litvisha Rabbanim held to the Aruch HaShulchan more, and Baruch pointed out that in the yeshivas they held to the Mishnah Berurah more, whereas in Rabbonus, they held to the Aruch HaShulchan more. I, despite Rav Soloveitchik and Rav Moshe Feinstein and Rabbi Henkin, I believe that the Aruch HaShulchan's day has passed in that respect, because the Mishnah Berurah, you can even say that the Mishnah Berurah is maybe the last of the Achronim. It does seem, although Rav Soloveitchik and others could, and Rav Moshe Feinstein could dispute with the Mishnah Berurah, it's today, if you look at the post scheme today, almost 100 years after the Mishnah Berurah's death, it does seem like it's almost impossible to find an Acharon today who will just reject the Mishnah Berurah out of hand like they would have done in the Mishnah Berurah's lifetime. It does seem that maybe we entered a new era. I don't know what they're going to call it. Come back in 100 years. The Rosh Yeshiva, or I'm not sure what they're going to call it. The Malak team, I don't know. But it does seem that the Mishnah Berurah, it's like a new tkufa, a new era. And forgetting the quality of one work or another, the Mishnah Berurah has won that battle. And everything now builds off the Mishnah Berurah, it seems. So that is the responsum of Rabbi Rasabi. Very interesting. Oh, so then Rabbi Aryeh Leib from Eretz Yisrael, Mechaber Svarim, Big Talmud Chacham, who's been watching the classes, sending me his comments. And I'm honored by his comments, and I'll get some more of them. And I think if we have to argue about matters, he'll usually be right in halacha, but he'll acknowledge that, and you'll see later that in our dispute today, I was correct, as he acknowledged. But he sent me a very interesting article by Rabbi David Aryov, who he says is a great Talmud Chacham, and has written one of its kind, several volume work of all the halachas of Bein Adam Chaveiro called L'Reacha Kamocha. And he also wrote the most comprehensive article in existence concerning the question you raised. And I'm holding the article here. And the article is how to decide Lamaisa in questions. He's mostly focusing on Shabbos. And he raises the questions. You have, for example, how to make tea. Well, he says we have many disputes. And what he discusses about Shabbos would bite everything in Hilchos Shabbos. And the question is, how do you know what to decide? Can you just decide you're going to go like the Mekilin? He says, for example, how to make tea. Some people say yes in the Kli Shlishi. Others say no. Some say even in the Kli Sheni. He doesn't say that. I'm adding it. And he gives a number of examples. Anyone can, opening bottles, things like this. Anyone, you can go online. You can read it used to be you go to a Sefer. Today you go online. And what do you do? How do you decide this thing? And he has a very long article bringing proofs from Rishonim and Achronim. I'll read you his summary. He says that this is what he concludes. And he brings the different, he gives different possibilities, scenarios. Let's say you have someone who wants to be Mekel and says, I'm going to go like the Mekeling. And then he says someone who actually asks a posig and he gives them heter. And then there's someone who learns from the Sifrei Poskim and he sees there's different opinions. All these different things. This is his conclusion. We're not doing his book, but I'll just give you his conclusion. He concludes that if someone's your Rebbe, if you have a Rebbe Muvak, you can follow everything he tells you. Even if everyone under the sun disagrees, even if he's not the greatest Gadol, but he's your Rebbe and everyone else disagrees, you can follow him, Lakua, even in Torah matters. But that's not what we're talking about, most of us. Then he says, just like Rabbi Rasabi says, he says, if you don't know that there's a machlokas or anything, you just start running a sefer. You can rely on anything the sefer says. Later, if you learn that, you know, hey, you're relying on this big kula in the chayyadim, no one accepts this, okay, then at least he then holds you should change your opinion. And Rabbi Rasabi also, although he wasn't so strong, he thought that it's probably like the best thing to change your opinion so you don't diverge from everyone else. But then he says, let's say you know, like, let's say you go on, you Google it, and you see there's many different opinions. And you see that most of the post-scheme are Mekel, but only a few are Machmir. You can be Mekel. So you go online, you see that in how to open a bottle or something, most of the big post-scheme are Mekel, a few are Machmir. He says you can pick the lenient opinion. But he says if most of them are Machmir, and only a few are Mekel, you have to be Machmir. It's that would mean though that if you go, let's say, if you just go online and you see in Ramosha's Mekel, but Rav Shlomo Zalman's Machmir, Rav Avadya's Machmir, Rav Yosha's Machmir, you have to be Machmir. He doesn't say you should, he says you have to be. I don't know, is that true? Can't we say that Ramosha's still Ramosha and that Yeshal Mal Lismoch? That maybe if it turns out in the days of the Aruch HaShulchan, you could turn on a light on Yom Tov, because the Aruch HaShulchan said you could. Over time, it developed that we didn't do that, so then it wouldn't be acceptable, I guess. But I'm not sure that this is accepted by everyone. And I mean, like, let's say you ask a Shaila, you ask Rav Asher Weiss, and he tells you something. And then you learn later that everyone disagrees with Rav Asher Weiss. He's not your posek, but you asked him the shaila. Do you then have to stop doing what you're doing? No. And who says you have to stay change? You asked him, so posek, he gave you his opinion. You followed it. How is it any different than if you read in a sefer what Rav Asher Weiss says? Everyone knows how great Rav Asher Weiss is. I'm not sure about that one. But I have to read carefully his arguments. And then he says, if you know that if there's a dispute and it's a matter of Torah, then you should go Lahachmir, if it's Rabbanah, and you should go Lakula. That's also a bit problematic because it gets back to the question. If for a posek, I know they often say that, go Lachumra and Daraisa, go Lakula. But if you're a lay person and like Ramosha Feinstein says, you can do it. I'm not sure we've said that in a case like that as a lay person. You need to decide this. And then he says, if you're a Talmid Chacham, however, and you learn the sugya, and you concluded that you could be lenient, it doesn't matter that everyone, that the lenient authority is maybe a minority, you can go by them. So we have some crossover with Ratzabi. I think there are a few differences in at least one area that's not so clear. But it needs to ask your local rabbis. Ask them, like, because most of our local rabbis are not real post-scheme. What do they do? if you ask them a question. Maybe they ask their posek, or maybe they just decide what considered the oilam does. I don't know. This is never to my answer to my satisfaction. We have in Choshen Mishpah, especially go before Beis Din, there's a concept called kimli that you can say, when you're arguing in Beis Din, you could say, well, you can't rule against me because I hold you should pass in like, I don't know, the Chalkos Mahoke, because his opinion is in line with mine. And that's a lot of questions. When can you say kimli in Choshen Mishpah? Okay, now we're up to Peivov, page 196. 196, number 86, and we return to this. This is not what I want there. I want this page. Where are we here? I'm losing it. Rav Menashe Kotzin, Rav Menashe Kotzin. Why did I write this question to Rav Menashe Kotzin? So let me give you the background. The question is, Ketivat halachot be'anglit, writing halachic literature in English. Now, the question, that wasn't my question to him. Michael, here's the background to the question. There is a journal called the Journal of Halacha and Contemporary Society. The Journal of Halacha and Contemporary Society has been around since the 1980s, and I haven't seen it in a number of years. I used to read it in the library. I never bought it, and it's not online as far as I know, although many of the old articles are online. I stopped reading it. The problem with the Journal of Halacha and Contemporary Society was most of the articles were just like, I think they dealt with every halachic issue under the sun, modern halachic issue, but they were what we call the summary articles. There's no independent thought, other than with few exceptions of Rabbi Bloyach. Basically, I remember reading an article and I was thinking you could take a response on Rav Avad Yosef and Yechav Adas, and anyone with a little learning could write those articles. Because what is it? A modern question, whatever question you want to ask. Rav Avadya, that's the simple tshuva, Yechav Adas. You start with the Gemara, and then he'll give you the Rishonim and then the Achronim, and that's so then you can write an article, a summary article. Can you use the Dut Shemesh on Shabbos? So you start with the Gemara, then the Rishonim, then the Achronim, you have an article. But that's, you don't need that if you know anything about the Sugya. So very disappointing, the articles. So just summary articles, almost journalistic, many of them. But there were some exceptions. And one of the exceptions was written by this man. Is he, I find him here for you. I'm going to have to pull him up again for you. Hold on. I have his picture here. Ah, here. Rabbi Mark Dretsch, who at the time he was a rabbi in Stanford when he wrote an article. And this is taking us back in the 80s or early 90s, I think. And here's his article. The Ethics of Selecting a Political Candidate. Now, we will get back to this article later, because that was my question. But Rabbi Klein, before he even gets to the question, deals with all sorts of other things. We'll get to it next week, right in time for election season. Although I dare say that many of you have already voted. I've already voted. So the conclusions of Rabbi Dratch and Rabbi Klein will not be a halacha maisa. But Rabbi Dratch's article is actually worth reading, because it's very different than the summary article. He goes through sources and he actually presents an approach that he thinks is in line with Talmudic readings and tries to make a case that really that halacha is not really relevant in terms of when we decide who to vote for. In other words, he actually puts forth an independent original position, which makes that article almost unique if you look at all the other articles. So kol kavod to Rabbi Dratch. So I sent the article that Rabbi Dratch wrote to Rabbi Menashe Klein. There's no date on the tshuva, but it was, I think, 1990. And I wanted to know his opinion. That is, do we need to focus on halacha? So let's say you have abortion. That's a big issue. You have a candidate who supports it and a candidate who opposes it. Maybe we should go by and vote for the candidate who opposes it. That's more in terms of halacha. Or other issues. If you look in the forward today, someone has a piece that you can't vote for Donald Trump. It's against Jewish law because pikuach nefesh is the most important thing, and he endangers people's lives by not paying attention to the problems with COVID. So you can make the question is this relevant at all? I work at a Catholic university. They're having the same issues also. Abortion is much bigger for them than it is for us. But does that mean you have to vote for a pro-life candidate? You can never vote for a Democrat. These are all interesting issues that Rabbi Drach, and we'll get into the meat of it next class when I deal with Rabbi Drach's argument and what Rabbi Menashe Klein says. But Rabbi Menashe Klein wrote me a very long letter, but when he published it in the Mishnah Halachot, as you see, it's in volume 12, number 135, he split it up. And the first section of the letter, before he even gets, and this is the four pages, before he even gets into the meat, which I was interested, that is, should we be concerned with halacha when we evaluate how to judge a candidate? He was upset and he wanted to speak about a different matter. He says, you sent me the Kuntres Angli, you sent me an English article. That's what I sent him was Mark Drach's article. Rabbi Klein knew English fluently. He came to America, he was young, he's a survivor of the war, and he had lived in America since the 40s, late 40s. So he knew English very well. But he says, you sent me this English article, I did not look at it. He didn't even look at it because I don't believe in writing halacha in English. Basically, it means I don't believe that Jewish law discussions should be written in the vernacular. It's hard to imagine that today you have so much written in English. You really, there are certain matters that the best discussions of them are in the vernacular. Rabbi Bloch's books have the most profound and interesting discussions of certain matters more than in any Hebrew works. So if you're an Israeli, you need to learn English if you want to really get the full understanding of halacha, perhaps. But he says he doesn't believe in it because the Torah was given in Hebrew. And he says that we have to be worried that we don't want the non-Jews to see, they could see certain things that don't reflect well, perhaps, and it will lead to anti-Semitism. And that's an idea that you find early on. You find all sorts of opposition to translating the Torah Shebaal-Peh, not the Torah Shebichsav. In the Catholic Church, they oppose translating the Bible into the vernacular. And the first person to do this was actually executed. He was burnt at the stake, and Tyndale, I think it was. They have a whole, they wanted to keep the people ignorant, not because just to keep them ignorant, but because if the people, if the masses were to read the Bible, it's a problem because they'd read all of a sudden that, you know, the Sabbath is on Saturday. And lo and behold, Jesus kept certain rules, and this will create problems. For them, you can't read the Bible without the tradition. Now, you might be sitting there thinking, well, they're really stupid and that's crazy and all that, but we have had a similar thing. There are people who have also, in our tradition, have opposed translating even works like the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch into the vernacular. There's a whole group of rabbis, Satmar types, who've written against the art scroll, that, and many have written against translating throughout the generations the Talmud into English. And if you're going to translate the Talmud to English, they said you can't translate the Agadic sections. So we have, and for the same reason that the people won't understand it, the masses shouldn't be exposed to this, the non-Jews will see it. When Rabbi Teitz started giving his Daf HaShavua, and it was in Yiddish, but I guess he was worried that people who know German might understand it. And later his son, Rav Elazar Meir, also did it in English, but Rabbi Teitz, when he was just doing it in Yiddish, he asked Rabbi Achiach of Weinberg, is there a problem? Because you're making it public. And this issue has come up. You have these people who help Israelis, they come from the Philippines, and they come to Shiurim and they understand English and they're learning Torah. So, I mean, there's always been this concern about non-Jews studying the Torah Shebaal-Peh. We'll see in a minute. And he says, first of all, it's against our tradition. We do not write Torah literature in the vernacular. In his tradition, coming from Hungary, it's true. But in Germany, it was never the case. But let's go on. He quotes how the Gemara tells us that when the Torah was translated into Greek, that it says that 3 days of darkness descended on the world. Not literal darkness, but it means figurative darkness, because now the non-Jews could access it. He goes on citing sources like this, and he says the Torah Shebaal-Peh was not given in writing. And one of the reasons, which he quotes the source, that Torah Shebaal-Peh was not given in writing, is that we didn't want the non-Jews to see it. And then you could have learning non-Jews, they could translate it into their language. Do you know the first, anyone know here? Let's see who can write it in the chat. The very first English translation of the Mishnah. Anyone know who wrote it? I'll give you 10 seconds. Who can quickly write it? Nah, Steinzel. Steinzel is our generation. Jay Kelman writes Dangy. I think he meant Danby. Herbert Danby. And a couple others know that. He was not just a non-Jew. He was a Christian. He was an Episcopalian or Anglican minister in Jerusalem. And he translated the Mishnah. It's actually a very good translation. And not only that, there's an excellent translation at Pirkei Avos with wonderful notes by R. Travers Herford. And he's a non-Jew. And it gets even better in the Sansino translation of the Zohar. One of the collaborators is himself non-Jewish. So we know that there are non-Jews who can read our holy works. Christina Hayes from Yale. I'm not saying that she spends her time or could do a Rephaim, although if she devoted herself to it, no question she could. But she's a great, great Talmud, academic Talmudist, and she knows lots and lots of Talmud. Well, Goyim can understand Svar also. They can understand Rephaim. What's the problem? And she's amazing, Christina Hayes, because until she got to Harvard, she didn't, as an undergraduate, she didn't know any Hebrew. Talmud is not like other things. You could learn like in a year to Aramaic or Hebrew to be able to read medieval philosophical texts. But Talmud, as we all know, you can't just pick this up in a year. This is it's very difficult. And yet she was able to. So non-Jews can. So he quotes the sources that Tar Shabbat Peh was not put in writing precisely because we didn't want the non-Jews to have it, because it's enough they take our Torah and say that they're the real Israel. They're going to take our Tar Shabbat Peh. And we know that once they had access to it, they did use it. They tried to find sources supporting their, like the Kuach of the disputation with Nachmanides. The apostate, Pablo Christiani, is citing rabbinic sources to prove Christianity. Later, you have a whole phenomenon called Christian Kabbalah. And we want to keep them away from our sources. We had to write it because we had no choice. Eis Lassos, there was an emergency. People were forgetting it. So they were able to write it, but we only wrote it in Hebrew language and in Lashon HaKodesh. He says Lashon HaGemara in Aramaic. We did not write it in the vernacular, even though the people spoke the vernacular. We don't want them to... If we allow them to, no sein yad l'akum l'poshi, it'll be problematic. And then he goes on, he mentions another interesting thing. He quotes the Shar Ephraim. Shar Ephraim, Ephraim of Hakohen, of Budapest. Actually, in those days, it was Buda. He was the Rav in Buda in the 17th century. We speak a lot about him on the first day of our Central Europe trip. He raises the question, all these piyutim, we skipped most of them this year. You ever try to read these piyutim? They're impossible. They're so difficult to understand. You need to be an expert to understand them. He asks, why are these piyutim written in a language no one can understand it? Ibn Ezra was very upset with this. He says, you couldn't understand it. The ones by Eliezer Kalir and others. And he says that, he goes on also that, that it's supposed to be in a way that, in a lashon that the non-Jews would not be able to understand it, because then they would take our prayers. They already took the prayer kadosh 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 sanctus sanctus sanctus. It's a central feature of the Catholic Church, the Mass. So that they take because it's in the Bible, but they're gonna start taking our other prayers. I don't know if that's historically at all correct. I don't think so. But the point is, and he quotes other sources, that the necessity of keeping our Torah literature in our language, so that the non-Jews don't have access to it because of all the problems that that could solve. And it's also that the non-educated don't have access to it. The last paragraph is, he quotes something that the Kasab Sofer, the son of the Chasam Sofer, writes to Rav Jacob Ettlinger, the great Binyan Sion. Rav Jacob Ettlinger sent him something in German, a kol kore, a proclamation, that he wants him to sign, condemning the reformers or something. And the Kasab Sofer writes back saying, I don't sign things in the vernacular. Obviously, in Germany, everything was in the vernacular. It's like today. Can you imagine in all our communities, if we'd say we wouldn't do it in English, even the rabbis write to each other in English. And he goes on, he quotes the Ksav Sofer. So he begins, just before we get to the meat, his whole idea is, and he says, I have a whole Kutras, which he did publish, a whole little book explaining why Torah literature only should be in, I have it here, over there, why Torah literature should only be in Hebrew. And it's an attack against Art Scroll. It's an attack against Art Scroll. And one of the things he attacks Art Scroll for, Art Scroll made, it was one of my early blog posts, as far as blog, Art Scroll and their Zmiros made an unbelievable mistake in the Zmiros, quoting an Aruch HaShulchan. It's, I can send it to you if anyone's interested. They corrected it. Everyone can make a mistake, but it was really a very, very embarrassing mistake that Art Scroll made. And so Rabbi Nachman has a whole book against translations, and just think what Art Scroll has done. Art Scroll has democratized Talmud study, but that goes against the whole tradition, and it's only supposed to be for the intellectuals, for the elites, and now the non-Jews could also see it. So we haven't even discussed the important matter yet, and that's where he ends the thing. We're going to pick up in next class, when we get to the next section of the book. Can you choose, can you vote for someone who's going to do things against the Torah? Let's see if we have time. Let me begin. I like to go to about 9:30 until I ask the questions, or at least. The next question, number 87, is by Rav Nachum Stefanski, or Stefanski, I'm not sure. I've never met him. He's not a great rabbi. Who was he? Who is he? Rav Nachum Stefanski was a student at Meir Kasher Rav, and for some reason he got it into his head that he wanted to become close to Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. So he would constantly go to Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach's classes. He would walk with him. He would ask some questions. One of the stories is he was invited to his house, and he put out. Show you here. He put out three volumes called Valeo Oyibo from the Han Hagotah, from the practices of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, full of amazing, interesting things. And then third volume that other people told him, I heard from Rabbi Kimchi in London, a student of Rav Shlomo Zalman, that reading this book, it really brought back memories of Rav Shlomo Zalman. He said, and he also has a book, incidentally, called Mimir Nativ Meir. Mimir Nativ Meir, yeah, from Rav Aryeh Bina, the founder of Nativ Meir. But you have these three volumes full of fascinating stuff. Let me just give you an example before we get to my question that he says. Just a few interesting things here. By the way, in here, it talks about the Rav Shlomo Zalman and abortion. It says that how he would send people to Rav the Tzitz Eliezer. But just to give you a great story I found here that I think you'll appreciate. He talks in volume one, volume three, page 330, how upset he was that the Hamodiyah did not give Rav Soloveitchik, after he passed away, enough respect. But no, what I want to read you is as follows from volume one. You'll love this. It's volume one, page 60. Because what you also see in this book is the issue of minhag and what the people do. And the story I'm going to tell you now is a classic example of the mimetic tradition, that word that we know from Chaim Soloveitchik, and the written law. And then we'll get to next, or it'll be next week, I'll tell you what in particular question I asked, and then he replied. So Rabbi Stefanski, or Stefanski, he's always with Rav Shlomo Zalman, and he said, while he's there, a yeshiva student comes up to him, asking him all these questions, and asks him, do you need to stand up for barfu? And it took a minute till they realized which barfu we're talking about, the barfu when you get an aliyah. You get an aliyah, so the guy gets an aliyah. He's saying, "Baruch Hu Hashem Barach." Do us in the audience there in the kehila, do we need to stand up? And the yeshiva student says the Mishnah Berurah says you do need to stand up. Um, Now, the thing is, the Rav Shlomo Zalman used to sit down. He didn't stand up for that. And Rav Shlomo Zalman says as follows. Rav Shlomo Zalman says to the student, there are many things that's written that the practice is to stand, and we see that we don't stand. And then Rav Shlomo Zalman says, Vayvarech David. The Ramah says the practice is to stand, and we don't stand. It's funny, Rav Shlomo Zalman in his shul, in Shari Chesed, he didn't stand. We all stand, I think. I haven't been to a shul where we don't stand. Has anyone go to a shul where you don't stand for Vayvarech David? And then he says, B'chazaras HaShatz. The Ramah, Ramosha Isra, says to stand. In yeshivas, they used to stand. But in shuls, the minhag is to sit. And that's also the minhag of Rav Avram David of Rosenthal. And he was the Rav of the shul that Rav Shlomo Zalman used to go to. And Rabbi Stefanski says he once asked Rav Avram Rosenthal, he wants to ask Rav Shlomo Zalman about this. The Ramah says you're supposed to stand during Chazaras HaShatz. So Rav Shlomo Zalman, I'm not sure if he's referring, if he asked Rav Avram Rosenthal or Rav Shlomo Zalman, he says the Rav. Normally when he says Harav, he asked Rav Shlomo Zalman about this. Rav Shlomo Zalman pointed him to the Minsker Gadol in his Sefer Or Gadol, where he says that this is just a chumrah. Even though the Ramah says the practice is to stand, it's just a chumrah. Okay, then it goes on Kriyas HaTorah and Baruch Hu. The minhag is to sit. Don't you see that everyone sits? In other words, the guy asks Rav Shlomo Zalman, shouldn't everyone be standing for Baruch Hu when the guy gets an aliyah? Rav Shlomo Zalman like, why should? Well, no, we sit. And he's saying, well, the Mishnah Berurah says you're supposed to stand. Rav Shlomo Zalman says as follows. Rav Shlomo Zalman says, "Atal lo roeh masha noagim." In other words, this guy is asking, "Shouldn't we stand up for Baruch Hu? Because the Mishnah Berurah says you should." And Rav Shlomo Zalman says, "What do you mean? Should we stand up? Can't you see what everyone does? That's the minhag." You say, "Well, the Mishnah Berurah says to." Fine, Mishnah Berurah says to, but that's not the minhag. Our minhag is to sit. "Atal lo roeh masha noagim." So here you have, on the one hand, the written tradition, the textual tradition, the Mishnah Berurah, going up against the mimetic tradition. And Chaim Soloveitchik's whole point was that many of these mimetic traditions had been pushed aside by the written tradition. Because how can you, if the Mishnah Berurah says it? I also mentioned in past classes, a number of you probably recall this, that I've noticed, I don't know what they're teaching these girls when they go to Israel or a seminary, because I've seen in many shuls where all the guys are sitting, including yeshiva students, including the rabbi, and you see these young women, they stand up. Like you'll see a group of them, four of them. Baruch Hu, they stand up for Baruch Hu, and then they sit down. Obviously, they were told in seminary, you're supposed to stand. The Mishnah Berurah says to. But I never have the courage. I don't want to be insulting. I always like wonder, they're sitting there. They see the rabbis not standing. They see the yeshiva guys are not standing. Some of them do stand, but plenty of them are not. The guy who gives the Gemara. It just, that's where Shlomo Zalman was saying. He says, look around. That's not the minhag, and we don't change the minhag. So that's interesting. Well, my question, which we'll get to next class, is Rabbi Stefanski quotes from Shlomo Zalman about this idea that when you decide halacha, it's not just the text, it has to be the regish. You're not a scientist. This isn't a computer. It comes from your intellect, but also your regish, your how do we translate regish? Your feeling. And all of us would know that if you go to a posek who's just a mean person or just doesn't have any feeling, you can't be a posek if you don't have emotions. You can't be a posek if you can't put yourself in the situation. You can't feel the pain of the person coming to you. You can't put them in your situation. So that's what Shlomo Zalman said, that you need, it's not just the intellect, you need the emotion to be able to appreciate, to be a posek. And so that's what I asked him about Shlomo Zalman's position on this. And we'll get to that. We'll also get to next class. Well, let me just keep you in suspense. Something really interesting. And then we will get to, Ramanasha Klein. Can you vote for someone who's certainly going to do things against the Torah? It just so happens it comes out in election season. I didn't plan it this way, but it's very, very fitting. And we'll get to that. So let me get to the questions. I will also get next class some more grammatical things and other people who've written to me. Someone asked me, Noach, is this part of a series? Okay, so you're new with us, Noach. Thank you. Welcome for coming. This is indeed part of a series. This is part 21 of the series. And I don't know how many more there are going to be. I'm guessing around 50 or so, 45.
But, I'll be sure to catch up.
Okay, don't. If you want to, feel free. They're all on YouTube. But yes, this is an open-ended series. And but each class we try to do independently. And but wait till we get to stuff about Jewish history and Jewish books and something unbelievable from Rav Herschel Schechter. Even if you're not such a great fan of Rav Herschel Schechter for political reasons, wait till you see his sitkus. What a story, I'm going to tell you. Shmuel says he heard Rav Moshe Feinstein was also against double names. I don't know, I didn't hear that. Is that interesting? What do any of his sons have double names? Let's see, Reuven has a double name, doesn't he? Reuven Feinstein? Reuven Shlomo, I think. Reuven Shalom. Isn't his name Reuven Shalom? I recall in the Igros Moshe, someone check it, that when Rav Moshe writes to his son, I'll check it right now, if I can, I believe he, I'm positive that he writes to his son as Reuven Shalom. The tshuva I'm thinking of is, yes, Shalom Reuven. He writes to his son. His son's name is Shalom Reuven. I'm looking at it right now. One of the tshuvas, neighbor Moshe. So that Shmua, I think, is not correct. Unless he had a special reason to give the name Shalom. Maybe Shalom's not a name. Maybe Shalom is just a good wish. Remember, Shalom is not the name, really, of someone. It's not like you're naming someone Yitzhak Reuven. I don't know. Ask someone. We used to have with us for many years. I think he listens later, but one of Rav Moshe Feinstein's great-grandchildren, one of Rav David's grandchildren, was listened to us for years. So if you're listening later, he's not with us live, he will get the answer to that. Baruch says, who came up with the name of Moetzis? The name of the body, members of the body, or someone else? No, Rosenheim, Yaakov Rosenheim came up with the name Moetzis. But what he says that you call yourself as Moetzis. They say, we're on the Moetzis Gedolei HaTorah. Look, it was a joke that he was making a joke to him. But yes, they refer to, they believe that they're on the Moetzis Gedolei HaTorah. They don't protest and say, don't call us that. They understand that. Shmuel says, two names complicates for Gittin purposes. Good. I don't know. That's what he's saying. But today, everyone gets two names, and not just today. It's been that way. I quoted earlier the Chasam Sofer's son, the Ksav Sofer. I mean, Rav Avram Shmuel. It's been many years already since people have had two names. Have I ever laned myself? I just laned last Shabbos, actually, one of the Aliyahs, the Mafter. I laned the last part of it, and a couple weeks ago, I laned the whole portion. So yeah, but again, my laning is I'm better in telling, explaining what to do than actually doing it, and I don't measure up to. It's not. I tried the last time I laned. I tried to do what Rabbi Weider does, all the Shvanas and Shvanats, and every Kamatz Katan, and then I did it for one Aliyah, and then I sort of gave up because look, no one is even going to notice. So I'm putting all this effort in. I'm not, believe me, like I say, those who can't do teach. So that's where I am. I'm okay, but I'm nothing special. Someone says that was not the Rebbe laning there. Oh, is that true? I didn't look carefully enough. Hold on. No, that's the Rebbe laning. Oh, you're saying the Rebbe's on the side?
That didn't sound like him.
No, that's the Rebbe lady. Definitely, it's Rebbe lady. Nachum Shemariyahu, you can maybe tell us about if there's a Chabad practice. I listened to the other. There's a famous Chabad Bal Kori, and he also says Vayehi. Maybe there's a separate tradition in. Look, you can have traditions, even if it's not grammatically correct. If the tradition developed in Eastern Europe, eventually it becomes a tradition, and that's what makes something a tradition. When enough people do it for enough time, even if it's not in accord with all the rules, I guess you could say it's a tradition. like we say B'nai Brak instead of B'nai Vrak. I don't know, but I can just tell you that all the works, all the grammatical works say it should be Vayhi. Shmuel says Baruch's right. That's not the Rebbe. Let me hold on a second. I don't know if it's you tell me this is not the Rebbe.
בימים ההם בזמן הזה ברוך אתה אדוני אלוהינו מלך העולם שהחיינו וקיימנו והגיענו לזמן הזה ויהי במי אחר.
That's definitely the Rebbe. That's not someone else laying here. That's the Rebbe. Okay, a couple more. Let's see the other questions. Lots of questions here. Let's go through them quickly. Ellen says, Hasidic Rebbes get to make up their own rules. That we know they do, but the Lubavitcher Rebbe was the master of Kol HaTorah Kula. So Baruch says it's not the Rebbe's voice. I don't know. I'm just looking at it. It certainly looks like the Rebbe. How could it not be? That's why the video is there, because it's the Rebbe. That's why they put it up there. They weren't, Chabad Lubavitch is not putting up a video of someone who's not the Rebbe. Nachum Shmaryahu, there it is. Baruch says Joel was not the lander, just the congregant. Okay, but thank you. Joel was the one who was makpid on Vayhi. There is no nikud in the bet in Mishnah Verura. That's what Ness, that's what we said, but we all say Berura.
There was a delay in the typing when you said that. I sent it and it only sent after you said it.
Okay. Doesn't the Koran Siddur fix a lot of the grammatical issues? Yes, the Koran Siddur does fix a lot, but the Koran Siddur, in my humble opinion, is not always correct. So, for instance, we've spoken a lot about how to say the word, the plural, the Levites. It's Halvi'im. Even if there's a Gaya there, you can see Rabbi Weider, he lanes it properly, Halvi'im. So then what we do every morning, the Shir Shayom, Shir Shayu, Halvi'im Omrim B'Veis HaMikdash, both Art Scroll and Koran have that there as a Shvanah, but it's not. It's a Shvanah. You're going to say, well, how do I know? Maybe the Siddur is different than, no, I mean, that the word Halvi'im, the only way we look in Nach, and that's how you don't put a Dagesh there. And if you look in the Simanim, Tikkun, it explains to you why the master rites did not put it there. And I did a blog post on this. There are times when Art Scroll is correct and Koran is wrong. No one can be right 100% of the time. But in general, Koran's very, very good. And isn't there an organization in Israel that's R&D for Shabbos-friendly tech? Yes, definitely there is. Somit. Yeah, thanks, Mel. Shmuel says, Rav Tzabi's view of the Aruch HaShulchan is upsetting. The Mishnah Berurah gathers many shitos and pasukim of Chumah, and the Aruch HaShulchan shows how he understands the sugya and is not afraid to pasukim when cool and necessary. It's an extraordinary work. I agree with you. And when I was in yeshiva, we were told to learn that. It's also very original, and he has in the Rashi print where he goes into the sugyas. But that's... Rav Tzabi sees it as coming forth with chidushim that can't be supported by the sources. He's a big mechadish in some ways. Remember, Rav Tzabi is also coming from B'nai Brak, a yeshiva community. You look at the Aruch HaShulchan, you see some of the things he's Muhammad Shchus on. People like Rav Tzabi don't understand what it meant to live in a shtetl when not everyone was yeshiva bachar. And the Aruch HaShulchan is trying to... produce a work like that. Who do I think the Posek Hador for Golas Jews in America? You were born in 2003. Who do you turn to? There's plenty of Poskim in America. Well, if you're in the YU world, you have YU Poskim. You have Rav Schechter, Rav Willig. If you're in the Haredi world, there's plenty of Poskim.
I'm in the Montreal world.
Okay, here, let's just keep it to mute, though, so type it in. The Montreal world? I don't know what's in Montreal. I can't tell you, but... these days, everyone sends questions that Posek doesn't need to be the local Posek. It's hurt the rabbis a lot because the local rabbis used to have authority. In fact, you're in Montreal, fine. You Posek don't need to be in your city, per se. And Noach says also, Noah, the tkufa of the achroni achroni. It's definitely, I don't know what they're going to call it, but you're correct, Noah. We're definitely in a different tkufa than earlier. The tachtoni, Moshmul says they were saying tachtonim, and Rabbi Kelman says we're in the tkufa of the mesadrim. Okay, whatever you're going to call it, it does seem we're in a different era now. Noah says, isn't the ruling that Shuvot can be written in any languages to achieve the most accessibility? Yeah, but the idea is that it's not about accessibility. You don't want, the Rabbi Klein doesn't think that the masses should have access. They should just know the yes and no answer. You don't want to let them, and you don't want to let the non-Jews in particularly, into the arguments. It's supposed to be it's like Latin for the church. It's supposed to be by the elites, for the elites. Rabbi Menashe Klein is not a popularizer. He does not believe, for example, in the mass study of Talmud. You know, he believes in elites. He's really very much like Hungarian of 100 years ago, that the elites study Talmud, the masses study other things. And Baruch says the journal stopped studying a few years back. Ellen says the Vulgate was the vernacular in its day. Not at all. The Latin was never the vernacular unless you're in Rome, going back a long time ago. In medieval times, the Latin from the beginning, Jerome, you're saying. Okay. By the time you get to medieval period, it's no longer the vernacular. Okay, I misunderstood what you were saying. Muslims also urge people to learn Arabic in order to read the Quran in the original. Obviously, they aren't trying to keep the masses ignorant because they do place a lot of emphasis on teaching Arabic. Yes, Muslims will tell you, as correctly everyone will say, that you cannot have a real translation. For Muslims, the Quran, the words are actually given directly by God through the angel Gabriel to Muhammad. So the only way you can really appreciate it is to hear it in the original. But we say the same thing. The Torah comes from Rono Shalom, and that I said already, what did the Alex say about translations? It's like kissing the bride through the veil. I think that's the most important reason we send our kids to Israel. So they can read. They're not going to become the greatest Talmid Chachamim unless they spend years. Maybe they will. But even if they don't have, only if they can learn a little bit each week, the ability to be able to read a Hebrew text, the ability to be able to pick up a Shulchan Aruch and the Mishnah Berurah and read something in the original, that means that you can be... You can be married to the Torah, as it were. It's not just engaged, to use an expression that Rabbi Soloveitchik spoke about Reb Chaim. And if you have to read through translations, you will never be able to really be married, embrace the Torah in and of it completely. So yes, translations help us, but it's very important. And the Muslims, but the Christians didn't have that approach. There's no stress on Limud Torah for Christians. I work at a Catholic university. The idea that there's this concept of study. Yes, some of the evangelicals study the Bible, but for Catholics, there's no such conception. Jastrow is Jewish, but he made a dictionary. Yes, he did not he didn't translate anything. Christine, yeah, you're right, not Christina Hayes, Christine Hayes. Christine Hayes, not Christina, correct. She's at Yale at the present. Shmuel says, in the Torah in Motion lecture with Daniel Sperber, he talked about his relation with Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and how attentive he was to the individual. We're going to get to some of the regish, very important. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach the stories are incredible about Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. Alan says, every politician does things against the Torah. Correct, Alan, but... should you then try to pick the politician who does less things against the Torah? Or is that not even a concern? The same question we're going to deal with next week that Rav Menashe Klein and Rabbi Mark Dratch deal with. Right now, they're dealing with in the Catholic Church. And again, at the Catholic University, I can tell you that this is happening. You have bishops saying you can't vote for Biden because of abortion. Others saying, no, this is just one issue. You have to take the totality of it. And others say this has to be an important issue. It doesn't have to be the deciding one. We will see what Rav Menashe Klein says about it. Mel says, in yeshivas and yeshivish minyanim these days, almost everyone stands for Chazaras Hashatz, and most people stand for Kriyas HaTorah. In yeshivas in Europe, they used to stand for Kriyas HaTorah. And I assume Chazaras Hashatz also. Chazaras Hashatz is mentioned by the Mishnah Berurah to also stand. But I think, Mel, if I asked you in yeshivish minyan, when they said Kaddish, What does everyone say? Do they say Yiskadal or Yiskadel? You can write it in, but I tell you, they say Yiskadel. Even though no one ever said Yiskadel in Europe. It was not done. Even in Rodin, no one said Yiskadel. And Yiskadel is not the original. That's not what they said in medieval times. It's not what they said 500 years ago. It's not what any rabbi in any place in Europe ever said. But the Mishnah Berurah held it should be Yiskadel. And that now has become the minhag that shows you the power of the Mishnah Berurah. But it's not the Masorah to say Yiskadel. I think the Rav actually said Yiskadel because he independently was convinced of it, but that was never the tradition, and yeshivas don't do it because of the Rav. They do it because of the Mishnah Berurah, and I've seen it in my own lifetime how Yiskadel became standard for yeshiva students. Baruch says it's definitely not the Rebbe Leining. Well, who is Leining then, Baruch? We all thought it was the Rebbe Leining. I believe you. I'm no expert in Chabad, but the people who put the video up thought it's the Rebbe Leining. But we'll get to Nachum Shmaryahu. He doesn't listen live, but he's our resident Lubavitcher. He's also a historian of Chabad, very talented young man. If you listen to Rabbi Rakefetz, he sometimes mentions him also. He will tell us who that is. He's saying the Rebbe is just reading along. He's not saying it. Okay, and you bet me for copies of all my books. I'm not going to take that bet. Okay, I take what you say, Baruch. You know more than I do with false advertising then. But we'll get to the bottom. Nachum Shmaryahu is going to tell us who's lame. I'm not betting, so I don't have to give you anything. The Rebbe's voice is different. I only spoke to the Rebbe one time. We're going to get to the Rebbe's letter to me later on as well. Okay, we're getting to the end. Yes, thank you, Howard, for that comment. Shane Mel says, after 12 years of yeshiva, students have to go to Israel to learn how to read Hebrew. Something, at least in the modern Orthodox, something wrong. When you go to France, for instance, you can speak to all the French people there in Hebrew. And these are people without yarmulkes because they get a strong Hebrew education. We don't really have Hebrew language. And in terms of Hebrew reading, it's, I'm not sure. Yes, the girl emphasized that you have to learn grammar. Rav Hinkin did. Daniel confirms that Rabbi Reuven Feinstein is Sholem Reuven. And several children have two names, yeah. I believe me, Baruch, we're assuming you're correct, but I'm waiting for Nachum Shmaryahu. And finally, we'll end with this, that Yellen says that Chat students speak Hebrew. Very good. Flatbush, obviously, they speak Hebrew. I can tell you from JSC, we didn't learn how to speak Hebrew at all. It's embarrassing. Maybe they thought it was Bittul Torah, but we did actually get good textual skills in terms of learning Gemara. And so you got to give that. That's good. And last thing, Mel says, but definitely not everyone, but many do. But the fact that many do, and if you see a guy, let's say 25 years old, a black hat from yeshiva, odds are he's going to say Yiskadel, it's the influence of the Mishnah Berurah, wearing tzitzis out. Who wore tzitzis out? Even in the yeshiva in Rodin, they didn't wear the tzitzis out. I know this from the book I'm holding right here, which I showed you from Rabbi Aryeh Bina, who was in Rodin. Now, he mentions it, but that's the Mishnah Berurah. The Mishnah Berurah wrote about it, so then it became... So the Mishnah Berurah's influence is so significant in our day. The unfortunate thing is that, among many, Rabbi Eitam Henkin, his doctoral dissertation was going to be on Rabbi Yisrael Meir HaKohen, the Chafetz Chaim. And had he written that, we do not have a real academic study. We have an article here or there by Benny Brown in particular, but we would have had a wonderful study, an academic study of the Chafetz Chaim. Unfortunately, like so much else, two more things. There was a Regents exam somewhere in Hebrew in New York, there used to be. Howard says that seeing Reb Breuer into his late 90s stand for Chazaras HaShas had its influence. Yes. As Reb Aryeh Leib was telling me, that if you look in the sources, he used the word conventional halacha, you should stand for Chazaras HaShas. But I already mentioned to you that, and I what I said to him is that's not the minhag, and Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach also, it says here, he would sit down, and there's many other sources that say the minhag, Rav Soloveitchik held, that you don't just stand, you have to stand with your feet together because it's part of the kiyum, the mitzvah of Chazar Sashatz. And finally, the last thing, Howard says, if you watch Siyum HaShas in France, almost all speakers spoke in Hebrew, whereas in the English-speaking world, there was pretty much an English with the odd one in Yiddish. If you haven't been, what Howard says is important. I remember when I went to France the first time, this is a long, long time ago, 30 years, I was able to communicate with my sort of Hebrew with their fluent Hebrew. All of them knew Hebrew, and they learned it. I asked them once, how do they all know Hebrew so? I'm talking about you go to the falafel stand, you're on the street, you go to someone's house for Shabbos. The schools taught them Hebrew. They have the Israeli teachers who would come in. We don't bring the Israeli teachers like they did, but everyone grew up knowing Hebrew. And when I went to Jerba, I don't know Arabic, their spoken language is Arabic. They all speak Hebrew. They're all taught Hebrew. It can be done. It would be difficult because we'd have to find, and it's difficult to do Ivrit be Ivrit. For example, where I went to school, you need Rebbes who speak Hebrew. Where are you going to find Rebbes who speak Hebrew? It's not so simple. You got to bring them in from Israel. Okay, everyone. Thank you, Noah. I see. I'll say yes. So this is your first time with us. We will be here, God willing, same time, same channel next week, and we'll continue going. Thank you very much for your many contributions here. Montreal Schools teach good safa. Tell your friends, have everyone sign up. I thank you all for coming tonight, and look forward to seeing you all next week.